Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everyone's having a good day so far. It's 6:30 p.m. here on the East Coast in New York, and we had a gorgeous day out today, and I think we're going to have some good weather for the next couple days, hopefully. It certainly makes up for the past week that we had, which was a little bit of a washout. But not to waste any more time, we are very excited to welcome onto the show for part one of the extended series with Linda Groff. Linda, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Glad to be back. Thanks.
All right. So, Linda, now we did a series of shows with you, a short string of shows that... You know, I mean, obviously it worked out so well that we had to have you back on. I know that there's a ton of different things to discuss. So this is actually part of a 12-part series that we'll be doing with you over the course of the next couple of months now, which is very exciting for me because it was a pleasure to have you on the show, obviously, for the first batch of shows that we had with you. So a very... very appreciative welcome back to you, and not to waste any more of that time, why don't you tell everybody about yourself?
Oh, good Lord. Okay. I'm taught in a university, California State University, Cal State Dominguez Hills, for 40 years or more, and taught in a few other places in the world. I've taught in Europe and in Japan, and also at Antioch College at one point. But anyway, I've been doing teacher studies for years. And so I'm now, you know, doing more focusing on a lot of writing and also talks and workshops, which I've always done over the years as well. But I put together a series of topics with the general theme of creating a better world and future for ourselves and future generations. And we have about 12 different topics under there that we're going to cover in the series. So the first one is an introduction to the future. So it's a funny field. And so I guess I could go ahead and start talking about that.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, so how do you study the future when it hasn't yet happened? All right, that's the big question. And what's interesting is that a whole field has developed called future studies or futurology, or a lot of people like the term foresight today. And
right.
There's even last year, you know, looking forward, having foresight about the future, you know. So the idea is, how do we anticipate? And there's a new group now that had a conference this last year in Italy called Anticipation, which is trying to apply futures thinking even to more different disciplines and kind of taking the position that in every area that we work in, we need to also look forward about what kind of world we want to create, not just, you know, where we are today or where we've been in the past. And,
sure.
And future studies is strange. It's been difficult getting it into universities. It's popped up in lots of different places and different countries' programs, but it's inherently very interdisciplinary. So people discover future studies from all different backgrounds and disciplines, which is, to me, one of the reasons it's interesting going to a futures conference, for example, because you run into people who come from all different kinds of backgrounds. And so it's a, you know, it's a stimulating group of people to be with. And you know, I think a lot of issues today, a lot of problems we're facing are complex, and they can be probably best dealt with by teams of people that come from different backgrounds as well and bring different gifts to the table, you know, to look at how to go forward. So anyway, but future studies to me is also something about empowering people. If you can get a better idea about where are the trends going, and then also one other thing that futurists do that I really liked when I discovered it is a lot of disciplines kind of study the past and the present, but they don't really always look at, like, what kind of future do we want to create. And futurists really do that. So they're looking at, and they don't claim to predict the future, though, which many people think mistakenly, but they do try to get people to become aware of, like, what is their preferable future? What kind of future do you want to create? So if you don't have a vision of that, or if you only focus on the things you don't like about the present, you're probably going to stay stuck there nonetheless because you don't have an alternative clear view of where you want to go instead, you know, as an alternative. So futures are trying to get people to also envision and get a better, you know, clear idea. What are the values that are important? What kind of image of the future, what kind of vision they have of what they'd like to create, so that they can then start, you know, putting their energy and resources behind trying to make that preferable future become more probable, I think is a good way to put it. And
okay.
Yeah. So futurists also distinguish sometimes between possible, probable, and preferable futures. So a possible future is just anything that could happen in the universe, which is quite a few things, probably
right.
just about
sure.
anything. And then a preferable future is the kind of future you'd like to create. And a probable future is what seems most likely that, you know, if you just keep going where you're going right now. There's a funny phrase which says, if you always do what you've always done, then you'll always get what you've always gotten. You know, so you have
right.
to sometimes be willing, you know, and it's hard for people. I think we're going through a period of massive change on the planet right now. And for a lot of people, that can be kind of threatening and disturbing because they don't know quite where they fit into this new world. And, you know, a lot of our institutions are under some stress. I mean, if you look at politics, it's not behaving in the way it has in the past at all. And if you just look at, you know, there's a lot of people economically hurting and, you know, we have enormous cultural diversity in the world now, all interacting with each other and, you know, the very different levels of development, different parts of the world. There's all kinds of issues to look at. Then there's all kinds of new technologies coming along, which is another thing that futurists look at a lot. There's various things that futurists look at. You can look at the future of anything and everything, but one of the other things that futurists tend to do is, you know, like you can just be an expert on energy futures if you wanted, you know, or demographic futures or whatever, some technology future. But a lot of futurists are more systems thinkers, you know, so they're trying to look at how things interact over time. And, you know, so they're looking at the world more from an interdependent point of view as
sure.
a way to also help solve problems better. And, but anyway, as a field, and there's people that, you know, as I said, come from all different backgrounds with different disciplines, and, you know, there are people interested in consciousness as well. I mean, how do we evolve our consciousness? How do we change our worldviews and our thinking in order to be able to better solve problems? And,
right.
You know, what are new technologies driving change? We're going to have the next couple of sessions after that looking at technology as a major driving force for change, which
right.
futurists
yep.
also look at a lot. But underneath that, you know, there's also the interesting question about how do new technologies emerge? And somehow somebody has to have some creative new thinking that puts things together in a new way that says, okay, maybe this technology would work. I mean, if you look at
sure.
someone, for example, like Elon Musk, who's a really interesting guy, you know, who's got SpaceX and he wants to have people, you know, be able to go to Mars and he wants to...
Mm-hmm.
He's got the Tesla car, which is, you know, a totally electronic car. And, you know, he's also got Solar City, I think. You know, so he was in PayPal before, but he's an interesting guy because he's a very creative guy, you know, and he's always trying to look forward about how do we, you know, save mankind and help mankind evolve in the future and so on. So, anyway, yeah. But besides all the new technologies that we're going to talk about more next time, but futurists also look at global mega crisis issues, which is a whole, you know, series of interdependent things like how is the population growing, energy, you know, do we need to convert from fossil fuels to alternative energy, renewable energy,
right.
population, food, how do we have enough food to feed everybody? Environmental issues, pollution questions. There's all kinds of issues that people, and water quality is another thing coming along that's really important. I mean, all of those type of things. Yeah, people call the global mega crisis issue, which are really population, food, energy, environment, water quality, all those types of things, and sustainability in general. You know, like if we have more and more people on the planet, how, you know, and we have finite resources, which most people would say is the case, then,
right,
you know,
yeah.
how do we deal with having the world get better for people or for so many people? You know, so we have to then learn to become more efficient in our production. And I think somehow over time we have to replace energy, physical resources with more creative energy, you know, or creative ideas as well and become more efficient in what we do. So there's a lot of aspects to future studies, an awful lot. And anyway, that's a few things to get started.
So, Linda, then I'm curious to know now, when it comes to future studies, and obviously, you know, we're talking about the introduction to it, really. What
right.
historically, how did this all begin? How did it become an issue, a topic, a thought, a thing for people to actually, you know, consider?
Right. Well, that's a good question. And I think it kind of originated, I think, well, let's put it this way. There's probably always been some people looking forward into the future. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean a crystal ball either, but, you know, just trying,
right.
Everyone in their own life makes some plans for what am I going to do today or tomorrow, or, you know, the next year or whatever. So
sure.
Everyone does it a bit. But as a field, I think some of it began in World War II, where people were trying to figure out, like, you know, do content analysis, like the allies of the, let's say, the opposition German newspaper, and try to get some idea of what was the state of their economy or their society from the newspaper. You know, stuff that would be like a content analysis. But out of it, after, you know, all these other methodologies developed, and I can give you a few, but as a field, it's very interesting because, as I said, you know, and future studies has had some difficulty in universities. There's been a University of Houston future studies program and University of Hawaii in the U.S. The Jim Dater at the University of Hawaii in political science has done future studies for years, and he's now editing a new journal, futures journal called World Future Review. And then the University of Houston had a future studies program under Peter Bishop and other people for many years. But it's not established everywhere. You know, it's been harder to get permanently into universities. And different countries have programs and so on. And, for example, I live in L.A., and at one point the University of Southern California Business School had a future studies program. And then it disappeared. You know, I think corporations
right.
stopped funding it or something. So it's a funny field because people come from all different backgrounds to get into it, and they kind of combine their what they've been doing with futures approach. And, you know, but some of the methodologies that futures use, let me just give you a few of them. Like, you can do trend extrapolation, like where if you have current trends and you try to project them into the future for 10, 20, whatever number of years, on the assumption, like, if these trends continue, then this is what things will look like at some future
right.
day. Yeah. And then people do computer modeling and dynamic systems analysis because people like, you know, like a lot of these global mega crisis issues, people have done studies. The most famous first one was called Limits to Growth, and that was back in the 70s. But the idea was taking issues like population, food, energy, environment, these mega crisis issues, and seeing how they interrelate within a computer model over time. As they're all, you know, it's complex doing computer modeling, but that's what that is. And then people also do what's called Delphi polls of experts, and they got the term Delphi, I guess, from the Oracle Delphi in ancient Greece, but it's a different methodology. And what you do is you poll experts on what they think is most likely to happen and when, and you go through, and then you summarize the results without the names of the experts, and then you give it to people a second time, and they can change their answers if they're convinced by other. You give people reasons why they give this time frame versus this one. You know, and then you give you actually give it like three times, and each time the experts, when they hear the answers other people gave without their names, but, you know, when they think it's most likely this to happen, if they might be convinced by someone else's reasons and give a different answer the next time. So by the time you've done it three times, you can get a pretty good consensus from experts on some topic of what's likely to happen. Another thing is a futures wheel, where you put a topic in the center of a circle, and then you do first, second, third order consequences from that, you know, like if this were to happen, this event in the center, and then you do a line to a first order consequence and circle it, and then from that to a second order consequence and circle it, and so on. So you can very quickly get a map, basically, of a whole bunch of consequences that would follow if this one event were to happen in the center of your circle. It's a brainstorming technique, but it's one that's nice because it's quite... You can get a lot of ideas very quickly, and it kind of creates a map, you know. So that's another one. And then scenarios are something probably everybody's heard of. Scenarios are where you, and futurists, again, don't say there's only, you know, you never do just one scenario. You would always do at least two or three because futurists never say there's only one future, you know. So you can do like a best-case scenario, a worst-case scenario, a most preferable case, probable, whatever, different types of scenarios. But you have to create initial conditions and your assumptions why you think those could exist, and then you look at the consequences that can follow if those initial conditions exist. And you can do best case, worst case, most probable case, et cetera, type scenarios. And then, you know, people get a better idea of what are the options about the future. And then another thing is science fiction, you know, which is very popular. And science fiction is actually based on a scenario, where you get a, you know, you get this initial, these conditions, and then the sequence of events that follow from that over time. But then you also create characters, and you have them different personalities and roles and so on, and you have them interacting with each other over time around that, those sequence of events as it unfolds. So you can actually create a science fiction story, you know, based on doing that. And
very cool.
You can do experiments and alternative lifestyles and see if different ways of doing things work, and that maybe becomes a popular thing. And then the last thing I would say is, well, there's probably lots of others, but intuitive forecasting. You know, this is intuition is where you don't have all the information you need, but you have to suddenly make a decision. So you have to use your intuition to try to put all the pieces together to make the best decision you can with the information you have. So those are just a few examples, you know, of methodologies.
Now, I see obviously on the website here, that's csudh.edu, where I'm at right now. And I think it's a good place for people to obviously check out, too, just to find out a little bit more about the methodologies that you were just discussing. And also, you do have another great website at lindagroff.net. And that's,
right.
Again, that's lindagroff, GROFF.net. That, again, for everybody that might be joining us halfway through tonight's episode, this is part one of a 12-part extended series that we'll be doing with Linda, and she's discussing future studies. And I know the general theme that we were going to be covering for this entire series was going to be creating a better world and a future for ourselves and for future generations, obviously. And if anyone that's been listening to the first couple episodes that we have with Linda and listening to the first 15 minutes or so that we've listened to tonight, you can tell that she's very passionate about this stuff and knows a lot about the topic itself and, you know, has an extensive experience in discussing it and learning about it and sharing her knowledge with others. So, Linda, not to cut you off for too long, but what else is it about future studies that you think people should really know?
Well, I think I said earlier, I mean, people have to discover their passion, you know, like what is it where, you know, where has everybody got some kind of a niche where they can contribute to the world in a way that they care about, you know, and where they can grow mm-hmm. themselves personally and so on. But as I said, you know, it's very interesting. I did get an MA program on the master plan at Cal State Dominguez years ago, and I had people from all different departments in the university and so on. But, you know, it became difficult because we switched. I don't want to get into all this, but we switched from a quarter to a semester system. Anyway, I've gotten my thought waylaid here. Ask your question again. What do you ask me? What's important?
Oh, I was just gonna say, what else aside from the methodology?
Yeah.
Is there anything? You know, other than that, I mean, I know there's a lot that goes into it. There's characteristics of the perspective. You know, there's clearly a lot that goes into it. It's not just, you know, a one-trick pony here.
No. I mean, you have to learn about all these different aspects of it, and then learn other people in the field. I would like to mention there are a few organizations that people can get involved with. I mean, I'm now retired from Cal State Dominguez Hills, so, you know, I'm working on my own and doing a lot of writing and so on. But there is a World Future Society that has a conference every year, and it's in different locations. It's going to be in Washington, D.C. this coming July. And people can go on a website, you know, and find out about these. There's a World Futures, plural, Future Studies Federation that has also members from around the world, and they usually have conferences around every 2 years. And, you know, you kind of have to, If you're studying futures, you know, you can get into that or go to that. And there's also an Association of Professional Futurists, who are people who are professional futurists working in the field, and they have annual events as well as other types of things, online stuff, and they have great online discussions about topics about the future, if you're a member of that. And this last year, there was something called an Anticipation Conference for the first time in Trento, Italy, which was started by different people who wanted to even have the idea of anticipation be even broader than future studies, you know, to look at how do we anticipate change and where we want to go in all kinds of different disciplines, you know. So mm-hmm. there's a, you know, the world is complex, and it's becoming more and more interdependent, and we're becoming interdependent globally more and more, and we need to figure out ways to solve problems. You know, we have,
right.
you know, all kinds of issues like global warming and responding to rapid technological change and dealing with all the cultural diversity of the world coming together and needing to take care of the earth and, you know, all these issues and deal with each other as human beings in a more positive way. And, you know, these are all kinds of topics, and how do we evolve our thinking and consciousness as well to be prepared to deal with all this change, you know? So there's a lot
Absolutely.
Of topics you can look at, and people can specialize in particular areas of futures as well. But it's interesting because I've given lots of talks about the future over the years to many, many groups, and the bottom line is anybody can be interested in the future because it's going to impact everybody. So,
of course,
you know, it's relevant to everybody's life. So in that sense, it's a quite interesting field. And part of future studies, I think my passion is if you can help people recontextualize how they look at problems,
right.
then they can start to see opportunities in change that they didn't see before. So it's empowering for people in that sense too, which is, I think, quite a good thing.
So, sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Linda,
yeah.
I should mention too, I mean, so you have over, what is it, 75 published articles already?
Yes, and I'm working on different books. I have one book called Evolution Evolving, Cutting Edge Issues for Humanity in the World, which is my own book on a lot of future stuff and change. And it's a very big picture looking at change. And I have all these models of change. I have looking at, you know, evolution of the universe and then the emergence of life and then emergence of humans and then our waking up and becoming conscious and so on and all these different things in a very big picture. And then there's also questions about where are we evolving in the future as human, you know, what are our options for future human evolution? And I've looked at a lot of those kinds of questions too. So it's very interesting. And then I have another edited book that's going to be based on, there's two futures, there's a futures journal called World Future Review, and I was guest editor of two issues, fall 2014 and summer fall combined 2015 special issues on future human evolution. And I got a lot of futurists from different countries to write about the issues of technology, transhumanism, which we can talk about maybe more next time, on sustainability questions, on cultural diversity questions and how we come together, unity and diversity, and then also consciousness. So, you know, it's cutting edge issues. And there's also the question, you know, humans starting to leave our home planet to go to space too. So there's really,
right.
you know, and if there's other life in the universe that we're going to encounter. So all of those questions, you know, are interesting. Yeah.
Sure. No, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, how soon is it that you think that is going to be something that occurs where, you know, where people are going to be physically transplanted to another planet to keep to keep human life going?
I think there's a lot of – there's NASA working on going to Mars. There's a private group called Mars One where they've asked for – I have to get the updated stuff on this, but they had like a couple hundred people who volunteered to go on a one-way mission to Mars if it happens.
Wow.
And then Elon Musk is also pushing going to Mars, you know, and he has his SpaceX rocket that just, you know, part of what he's trying to do is get a rocket that's reusable, because if you have a reusable rocket, then you can, you know, it cuts the cost down quite a bit to go to space. But there's huge issues. We can talk more about some of this in the next two sections. We're going to talk about technology. But there's whole questions about humans adapting to living in a very different environment of space, you know. There's all kinds of human factors of humans trying to live in space. And then, you know, I mean, there are definitely other people who think that, you know, there's been contact with extraterrestrial life already, and it's keeping, you know, it's kept secret. But, you know, we can talk about all this stuff. There's a ton of stuff that's interesting to look at. But, you know, that we would be the only life in the whole universe when there's billions of galaxies and billions of stars in every galaxy.
Right.
And, you know, and some people think now that our physical universe may not be the only one, that there can be different bubble universes even, you know. And so if you start thinking about all that and then you think that we would be the only life in the entire universe, that seems pretty kind of
pretty far-fetched, right?
Yeah. You know, so just from statistics, Carl Sagan years ago, who did the whole Cosmos series, you know, he tried to figure out mathematically, and there's a Drake equation, I believe, looking at trying to figure out, and then people are trying to update that today too. So, and you know, so even, you know, the SETI project, you know, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, they've said that they think in 20, 25 years, if we had the right funding, we could encounter intelligent life. So I think it's on the horizon, you know, for sure. And other people, you know, we can talk more about all this. There's different views about all this.
Right.
But, yeah, so there's scientific views and then other ones, but they're all, but it's, I think it's a topic increasingly on the horizon just because people are looking at all this thing about going to Mars and so on. You know, I think we're starting to be a human species that is leaving our home planet, you know, and that's an interesting development, and that could happen in different places in the universe, right?
That's, sure, absolutely.
So,
and for people now, Linda, for people to kind of, you know, find out more information about future studies, obviously. Now, I know you mentioned a couple of different organizations, but there's also a good amount of journals and magazines and newsletters that go around and circulate, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's something. The World Future Society has published something called Future Surveys, more introductory articles for general interest. Not Future Survey, I'm sorry, The Futurist. They have published that for many years. And then, and I think they're still doing that. There's new leadership in the World Future Society, so it's undergoing some changes. And then they also published something called World Future Review, which is more a little more academic journal, which is where I just edited those two special issues on future human evolution. But the World Future Society did sell that journal to SAGE, which published it before anyway. And SAGE is now publishing it. And Jim Dater, who was set up a whole future studies program at the University of Hawaii for many years and is a very well-known futurist. And he's now the editor of this new journal, and it's focusing on futures methodologies and so on. And then there's another, there's journals published in England, The Futurist, and then the Association of Professional Futures, Futurists also, you know, they have a great online discussion where a lot of people put stuff all the time. You know, so there's a lot of ways. You know, if you did it, I guess somebody could do a Google search for sources. And, you know, there's, and I think, you know, there's sometimes there's corporations have an in-house futurist that they hire just to do futures type things. Sometimes people bring in outside consultants and so on. There's a range, you know, and then there's some, you know, that what happens is you get people also in universities who just discover the field and they're already in some other discipline. And they discover future studies, and then they create a course, you know, on that in their university. And then, like, you know, then every once in a while people say, well, let's put a bunch of courses together and see if we can't get a whole program. So, you know, that happens different times. But University of Houston is the place where, in the U.S., the best place to go. And University of Hawaii are the two places. And then in other countries there's other programs as well. So, it's an interesting field, and, you know, it's well, this is my own little, you know, universities tend to be organized based on the old Newtonian model of separate disciplines, but future studies is sort of inherently interdisciplinary, and also with people coming from all different backgrounds and disciplines. So it doesn't quite neatly fit in the old Newtonian model of, you know, and so it pops up different places, but it you know, it's interdisciplinary inherently, and universities are organized more by disciplines. Although, you know,
of course,
you have to bring together people from different disciplines to do future studies properly. Yeah.
Well, Linda, unfortunately, we're running out of time for tonight's episode, but I do want to say that we do have you coming back on for part two of, again, this extended 12-part series, next Monday, the 16th, at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So why don't you let everyone know real quick the best ways to contact you if they have any questions.
Oh, well, should I give them my email?
Sure, email's great.
Also, the website that is created, the www.lindagroff.net, has my contact information under one of the things. It has a shorter bio, and it has a longer resume with all the stuff I've published over the years.
Yes, exactly,
and, and has the first two radio interviews we did are on there, and then these as they unfold will be put up there too. So,
very nice.
But it does say how to contact me in terms of my phone and my my email.
All right.
And
well, Linda,
website,
we've
yeah.
run out of time, though. But, again, like I said, we're going to have you back on the show on Monday, the 16th, this Monday, the 16th, at 6:30 p.m. So we'll look forward to continuing with you then, okay?
Great. And we'll focus on technology next time. Yeah.
All righty. Well, from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying thanks for listening and have a great night.
Okay.